Nerd Culture Podcast, the new 52 audio review.
Yep, that's right. We've actually got a special edition of a audio review, the DC Comics New 52 Week 1. The podcast recording went as a little bit over time, so we decided to put the unedited reviews onto the website as a special edition. So without further ado, here is the full version of all the reviews of the first week of the New 52. So for this installment of From the Racks, we are going to be covering the first week of releases for the New 52 from DC Comics. It's a huge event in the world of comics, with DC rebooting the universe once again, and with a whole new focus on a new generation of readers, a new younger generation of readers. So it's not for us old school comic readers who have been reading, you know, all our lives. It's for a new batch of readers, so we'll try and look at it in that vein, plus also what it means to us. For the first week, it was an interesting mix, in my opinion. So we'll go through them in alphabetical order from release, starting off with Action Comics number 1. Okay, Action Comics number 1, of course, starring Superman, the flagship, the iconic flagship DC character. It's written by Grant Morrison, with art by Rags Morales. So to give you a bit of background on the DC comic reboot, it's only been 5 or 6 years since there's been an influx of superhero characters, so it's all started again, so no more supes around in the 30s. It's, you know, no more Justice Society, that sort of stuff. So Grant Morrison, being a big fan of the old school sort of way of comics, has done something pretty interesting in my opinion. So it's basically deals with Superman fighting corrupt businessmen, which is kind of unusual. So no punching Doomsday in the face. It's actually more just intimidating corrupt businessmen and people with a sense of authority into doing what's right. So working for the common man. And to that end, he has the infamous new costume that he starts off with. Eventually gets another costume. But the jeans, T-shirt, and the ridiculous little red cape sort of thing, sort of the Superman of the common people.
I like it.
It is pretty cool, actually. Yeah, I mean, other than the stupid cape, the costume, you know, it's pretty cool.
Superman looks good in jeans.
So that's basically what Supes did when he first appeared. Anyway, so he couldn't fly. He was, you know, able to lift tall buildings and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, he just beat up, you know, wife beaters and gamblers, mobsters, and stuff like that. So it's pretty good, vigilante style.
Yeah, Morrison's clearly gone back to the single shoes today's for his inspiration. If you've read the original Action Comics number 1, yeah, it's wife beaters, corrupt landlords, evil businessmen. I mean, he was just out for social justice. Yeah.
And it is set in a modern day sort of thing, so people have phones and, you know, people take shots of Supes as he runs past and stuff, because let's face it, if Supes ran past, he would take a shot at. The story itself, of course, because it's now a reboot, they have to reintroduce a whole bunch of new characters. So of course they introduce Supes himself, but they also introduce Lois, Jimmy, Lex, Lois's father, various sort of type people. I don't want to give too much of it away, obviously, but I found it kind of weird, to be honest with you. So the introductions, they stay true to the characters themselves, but it was a bit strange to have them in this new setting when they were quite clearly just the same people. So nothing really much had changed all that much. And it seemed like, even though this is for new readers, you seem to need some sort of background information in order to understand what was going on.
You do.
So I
was left with the question as what's turned him into a vigilante?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. The perfect example for me was Lex. So Lex is there. He looks slightly different to what he does normally, but essentially he's just the same old Lex. But where's his reason for doing what he's doing? So he said, yes, I'll do this for you, which is get them Superman so they can study. But why? And how does he go about doing what he does? And the motivation itself just seems a bit odd. Unless, of course, you know Lex from the previous DC universe, and of course you know exactly why and what he does and how he does it. So it's kind of weird. The artwork is all over the place. I'm usually actually a fan of Rags Morales, but this is meant to be a new, younger Supes. But for some reason, in some of these shots, he is
older than he should, than he appears in Summer Shock. You have one panel where he's standing there with, you know, his muscles and his t-shirt, and he looks quite young. He looks like he's about 20, 22, 25 at the most, with his ridiculous little waist, as Crystal pointed out. But then there's a panel directly next page where he looks like he's about 40. I mean, how's some consistency here? I mean, is it? And also, just some of it is a bit confusing. So, I mean, I've been reading comics for a long, long time, so I, you know, pride myself on being able to know what's going on in terms of sequences. But the bit where the police chase after him in the slums area, half the time I didn't know what the hell was going on. So, Action Comics number one, overall okay. Not what I would have wanted for the flagship DC character. So I give it 2 Lukes. What did you guys think?
I actually sort of agree with a lot of what you've said. My thing was, I felt it was a revisionist take instead of a reinvention, and that it would just seem to be yet another side take to Superman, as opposed to giving me the new Superman that's going to propel the DCU forward. You know, I don't feel like I've gotten, you know, the relaunch of the character yet.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And that for me is a big problem. I would have liked more story, and I would have liked more Clark Kent.
Yeah.
To actually ground a lot of the action, and to ground Superman's character, and to give a little bit more insight into why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because it is a slightly different take to the previous one, in that he's not quite the noble character yet. He's got a sense of justice and morality, but he also has a more vigilante approach, which is...
You just remind me of something, actually, that is the one thing that I hated about this comic, was he... breaks a wife beater's both his hips and a couple of his ribs.
Mm.
Now, personally, I have no problem with that. I mean, wife beaters should have their ribs broken, that's fine. But I just don't think Soup should be doing it. That's something Bat should be doing.
Mm.
He looks like Harry Potter in it.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right.
Clark Kent, boy wizard.
And also the strange thing of having them work for different papers.
Yeah, that's... And that wasn't...
I didn't research it. I don't know if that's how it was back in the day, but it was just kind of...
Originally, Superman did work for...
The Daily Star.
A paper called The Daily Star.
Ah, okay, cool.
So maybe that's sort of his subtle nod. But, I mean, you know, Lois and Jimmy... Well, Lois, sorry, more importantly, because Jimmy wasn't really around at the start there. But Lois also worked for the Daily Star early on, so... But that could just be, you know, Morrison's little subtle nod to that early continuity.
Yeah, I guess. But it just seems kind of, oh, they work for rival papers, and yet they're always communicating.
Mm.
I
mean, yeah.
Jimmy's his best pal yet again. I mean, why couldn't they have had something where Jimmy was his arch-enemy, or something that was, you know, just to break things up a bit? I don't know.
Some unclear storytelling, I think, is...
Unclear. Which is a shame, because Grant Morrison, one of my favourite comic writers.
Going, oh, the humanity.
Rating?
I agree with you. You go, what, 2 Lukes?
I'd give it 2, yeah.
I'd say it's about there.
Okay. All right, Richard?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on a couple of points.
Excellent.
I actually love Grant Morrison's take on Superman here. It's a younger, more brash Superman. He hasn't quite developed into the, as you say, into the noble character that we know he's going to become. But there's still hints of it. No, he's out there. He's trying to do his best. He has no real heroic referencing, because there are no heroes before him. So he's out there trying to do his best. He's trying to to deal with social injustices the best that he can. And I like that take. I like that he's not, you know, that he makes mistakes, that he's not quite there yet as a hero. That's certainly how I read the injuring of the wife beater. Was that he just doesn't really know his own strength yet. He's, and I really appreciated that take, because certainly these days, even with
I mean, he throws him out of a window.
Yeah.
Into the bay.
Yes.
So whether you know your own strength or not, that's end result is the same. I mean, you would have to know, if I throw someone out of a window, and I'm not Superman strong, but if I threw you out of a window, you would be in pain.
And in pain is where the guy ends up, but Superman doesn't know what he's doing yet. The actual approach to Superman in this book was excellent. I do agree more story would have been nice. It is, however, I mean, it's Action Comics, and they've clearly gone for an action-oriented approach. Yeah, my biggest complaint was one that Luke brought up. I agree there should have been a little bit more Clark Kent, so we can get a sense for who Clark is and how that relates to what Superman is doing. I think that would have been nice. But, yeah, look, overall it was an entertaining issue. I think it actually should have come out before Justice League, and that Action Comics really should be showing the history of superheroes leading up to the Justice League.
Yeah, totally agree there. Yeah.
But I'd actually give the issue 3. I thought it was a good, solid start. I'm hoping we'll get a little bit more story in the next few issues.
Excellent. So next up we have Animal Man with Richard.
Animal Man is written by Jeff Lemire and penciled by Travel Foreman. Tells the story of Buddy Baker, who is a superhero who can tap into kind of the life force of all animals.
And life web, I think he calls
it. Yeah. Basically gain the abilities of any animal that's within range of his powers. The issue opens with an introduction to the character. We meet his family. We find out pretty much everything we need to know about him. He's a superhero. He's an activist. He has a very loving family that he certainly cares for greatly. He loves being Animal Man. He loves being a superhero. But it's kind of a part-time gig for him. He's also an actor in this part of the story. And we get to see him in action. He deals with a hostage situation at a hospital. But he does it in a very non-traditional superhero kind of way. Like, he doesn't leap in, you know, fists flying and try to beat the guy into submission. Then, once we sort of get past that, Lemire starts setting up what's going to be the subplot of the story. There's something going on with Buddy's daughter. And we start to see some more horror elements to the book. I have to say, I absolutely loved this issue. I think the artwork is fantastic. Trevor Foreman uses multiple mediums and different art styles at different points in the book to get across the different feels that he's after. The horror sequences are very different to the family sequences. I think we learn everything we need to know about the character, and you're given a reason why you should care about him. You know, why you would want to read about Animal Man, and why you want to get involved in his story. And I think for a first issue, this does everything that it needs to do. We're introduced to the character, we know what he can do, we're given an interesting subplot, and yeah, it just hooks us in. And I'm going to give it 4.
I disagree. That's one of the ones I had time to read, and if I've not read Animal Man before, and as a number one issue, I found that the end, I didn't really know what was going on. Coming at it from they want new comic book readers to start reading these number one issues, I think that failed on that point.
Okay, interesting. Because I have to say, I'm the complete opposite after reading this first issue. I'm really excited about the book and really want to see what happens.
Well, I got
next.
The sense that it would get explained more in further issues, but I think it failed. And I got to the end and didn't really understand what was going on with the daughter.
I think this is quite a good book. I like the artwork. I like the fact that of all the number ones I've read so far, this seems to have the most story in it and is trying to not just tell a story but, you know, engage with characters. It's got some interesting scenarios. I give this not a 4. I give this a 3.5 Lukes.
Cool. I also agree with both of you. I was never that big an Animal Man fan in the old 52, but this guy he's got me hooked. I mean, I really hope it's a success because I want it to continue on. It's well told, tells you everything you need to know. His powers are interesting. The artwork is magnificent. I especially love the shot where his son comes in, his son's talking to him, and the picture of his son is actually the bench that he's leaning against.
Yeah.
It's just magnificent stuff. And you like the horror stuff, obviously, is different. It's got some interesting hooks, you know. The way his powers are affecting him, and of course his daughter at the end. I definitely I give it 3.5 as well. Yeah, it's quite good.
And just one quick point, it's made me want to go back and check out some of Jeff Lemire's other work. Really familiar with it, but it's done what debut comic should do, which is, this is cool. I want to go read what else he's done now.
I mean, I read the original Grant Morrison Animal Man run, of course, because it's Grant Morrison. But it just wasn't that big into the character at all, but yeah, I'm definitely hooked now. And good job. Okay, next up we have the return of Barbara Gordon as Batgirl. We have Luke.
Cool. Batgirl is written by Gail Simone and is illustrated by Adi and Saif, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. The big thing about this issue is that it is the return of Barbara Gordon, and there's been a bit of thing about is she going to be in the wheelchair, is she not going to be in the wheelchair, what have you.
So just give our listeners a bit of background to Barbara Gordon.
Barbara Gordon was the previous Batgirl, who was then shot in through the gut by the Joker and was paralyzed in The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, and has been since in the DCU as Oracle, a wheelchair-bound yet highly effective member of Justice League Birds of Prey as their computer connection. However, is now back in the leather as Batgirl, and as I said earlier, that's part of been what's been slightly controversial, because she's been quite well received as a wheelchair, as a paraplegic, and they've now taken that away. Gail Simone has attempted to make it accessible to new readers by delving headlong straight into the story, but has attempted to satisfy the older customer base by explaining that she was still crippled by the Joker and has now recovered. We have not been told how she has recovered the use of her legs just yet. I'm assuming that's going to happen in later issues, and we don't need to know that right now. What we need to know is that she has been a paraplegic, and Killing Joke is still in continuity. She has been wheelchair-bound and has now recovered, and this is really about her recovery as Batgirl, more than as Barbara Gordon, as her returning to form as a vigilante. And I think the Barbara Gordon, Batgirl aspect of the book is excellent. Gail Simone has made Barbara, or has continued to make Barbara an interesting character. There is an interesting mystery going on with the villain called the Mirror, who's going around killing people on this list. Barbara Gordon is on this list, and this person's going around bumping certain people off, and Barbara Gordon finds herself embroiled in it. It's a good first issue. I will read beyond this. I give this 3 looks.
I got the feeling that the list was kind of a Final Destination sort of deal. Like, yeah, you should have died, or something should have happened, and
yeah, that's certainly the implication.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, it went from there. So I like the Mirror. I thought it was pretty cool.
Mm.
The story itself, I mean, I love the fact that Killer Joke is doing continuity, because goddamn, I love that story. And you're right, you don't need to know why she's back.
Mm.
And the whole thing about the controversy, I just don't understand it. I mean, in comics, in the DC universe, people come back from ridiculous wounds on a regular day-by-day basis.
Like, so say, Batman, who was also a paraplegic.
Yeah, exactly right. So Barbara should have been up and about a week later with just a small bruise, and everything would have been fine. I love the fact that she was the Oracle as a character. She was awesome. But it makes sense in the DC universe for her to be walking around, and it's good. So I'm glad she's up and running. So I give it 3 looks.
I was just going to say, I haven't read that one, but I would have thought, as a reboot, if it's a reboot, they would have been going back to the start like they did with Superman, so before she was a paraplegic.
Hmm.
Well, it's kind of only a... This is where it gets a bit weird. This is it's a relaunch, in that all the titles are starting with number one, but they're only rebooting bits and pieces.
So if their efforts are to bring new readers to the fold, that's making it even more confusing.
I'm with you. I agree.
Well, they're trying to find the right balance between not completely alienating the existing readers, but also trying to attract new readers by making accessible first issues. Whether it's working or not is obviously a topic for
We'll get to that later. To the individual reviews, but you make an excellent point.
But just on that, I do think that of all the ones that have been released so far, Batgirl is a lot more successful in straddling the line.
Yeah.
I think Animal Man does a better job.
As in one of the more successful ones.
Oh, okay.
You know, it makes it clear that she's had a past in the past DCU, but I didn't find that I needed to read 20 years worth of Birds
of Prey.
Well,
you don't really. I mean, Killing Joke is still continuity, but it's within the 6 years that it's been happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, it still makes perfect sense. I mean, it works. I've got no problem with that, but I agree with Crystal that just, I mean, obviously we'll get to it later, but it's just, it should have been just a wipe clean sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Richard?
I think that Gail Simone's probably the only person that could have pulled this book off.
Uh-huh.
She's done great work in the past writing Barbara Gordon, so she's got a really good understanding of the character. And that comes across in the first issue. Even with the return to Batgirl and the fact that she can walk again, you still get a really great sense of who Barbara Gordon is as a character.
Uh-huh.
And how this change is affecting her. And also, I have to give credit to Sias' artwork. He draws a very graceful Batgirl. Apparently Gail Simone asked for him to draw her in a way that sort of reflected that she had heavy sort of ballerina training and things like that. So, and I think he's captured that really well. She moves very differently to the way most of the superheroes move in comic books. They're usually a bit more sort of heavy-handed. She's very graceful and lithe, and I appreciate that. And I'd give the book 3.
Okay, moving right along. It's Luke up again with Batwing.
Batwing is one of the new characters that they've created, particularly for the relaunch. He was introduced in a recent issue of Batman Incorporated, partly to set up the character so that, you know, he had a bit of a presence. But he is effectively a brand new character. Batwing itself was written by Judd Winnick and illustrated by Ben Oliver, and he is an African character, part of Batman's global vigilante enterprise operating in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And this comic is all over the place in terms of story, in terms of artwork. I think this is a very weak book. I'm not interested in Batwing as a character. I, in fact, think the more interesting character is the police offsider that that Batwing's...
The female police officer.
Yeah, that Batwing's secret alter ego has a working relationship with. She's only in for 2 pages and seems to be far smarter and far more interesting and capable than the main character itself. I don't see how this is different from any other Bat book out there. The Democratic Republic of Congo could have just been Gotham, it could have been New York. There is nothing really to distinguish this at all, which is a shame because there is promise in the idea, but the execution is flawed. I give this 1 Luke.
There's 2 things that annoyed me about this issue. First of all, Batwing could just be Batman. There's nothing in the book really that makes him stand out as a character. We're shown all the reasons why he's like Batman, but we're never shown why he's different to Batman and why, therefore, I should want to read about him as a character distinct from his mentor. And the second point, as Luke said, I don't get a sense of the Democratic Republic of the Congo at all. Like, I don't get the sense of the cultural differences between Africa and, say, Gotham. Yes, there's corruption. Okay, we know that. That's no different from Gotham, where the police force in Gotham is corrupt as well. I really would have liked a little bit more of a sense of what Africa is like and what the Congo is like specifically to sort of give me an idea of why I should want to read this book. Yeah, it just didn't really give me anything distinct from the regular Batman universe. Look, I'm going to give it, let's say, 2. It's not really that bad, but it just doesn't really stand out for me in any way.
Okay, I agree, I disagree. I actually think... Well, I'll start with the artwork. I'll start with the good stuff. I actually thought the artwork was excellent. It was the one of the few ones that I opened up and thought, this is awesome. Mainly because I'm just a fan of that sort of style. I like that sort of computer work. I'm a big fan of the... it's quite similar to Uncanny X-Force, which I'm a big fan of.
The computer painting.
The computer painting stuff. I do agree with the story, though. Yeah, it could have been set absolutely anywhere. It doesn't really give you all that much. I mean, it hints at a little bit in terms of saying, well, I mean, they're not going to be scared of me dressed up as a bat because, you know, who really cares? I've got to sort of create a myth in Africa. We're quite good at myths and stuff like that. I like that. That was a good little touch. But other than that, you're right. Could be anywhere. Could be anything. I disagree about the female police officer being smarter, though. I mean, he does set up the clues for her to find intentionally, knowing that she was capable of doing that sort of stuff. But I do like the fact that she's just as corrupt as all of them, but is actually trying not to be. So that was pretty cool. I mean, they could have quite easily just made her not corrupt at all with a big shining light just like he is and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But that wouldn't work in the real world, no. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
But I would like more about the idea of the corruption in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
But you'll get to that. I mean, it's only number one. You'll get to that eventually. I mean, there's only so much you can do.
But as a number one issue, it is meant to be setting up, you know, all the reasons why we should be interested in the book.
Yeah, and I agree.
Any of that.
Well, I mean, I probably won't continue on with it. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I really like the artwork. But of all the Batman Incorporated characters to use, I would have used the American Indian ones.
I would have used Night Runner.
The Muslim character. The
Muslim character.
They're going for
diversity with the new relaunch.
Night Runner as well, yeah. But I really, really like the Batman Incorporated story with the American Indian ones. I thought they were very good.
One thing I will say about Batwing, I'm actually more interested in this African team that used to exist.
Yeah.
Which gets mentioned just briefly, but that sounds kind of interesting.
So yeah, so it was in case hit and misses, I'd say it was a miss. So I would also give it I'd give it 1.5 looks out of 5.
I've got Toto stuck in my head now.
Okay, so we've got Luke again. Wow, you're on fire, Luke. This is what happens when you go alphabetical. Detective Comics, Volume 2, Number 1.
13 issues away from 900, and they relaunched the entire series again.
Oh, yeah, that's the same as with Action. I mean, as really, with Action. The longest-running comic, and they relaunch it. I mean, could you have not just let it go?
I'm sure that they will do special issues when it comes to those key issues anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
And they'll just acknowledge that it's officially the 900th or 1000th issue or whatever.
Okay, now this is one of the flagship Bat books, and in which basically what they've done is they've just swapped the creative teams over, certainly in terms of the writers.
Yeah.
Tony Daniel, who was previously writing Batman proper, is now writing Detective, and Scott Snyder, who was writing Detective, is now writing Batman.
Right.
So there hasn't been really much of a change creatively. And yeah, Tony Daniel is an artist as well, so he writes and illustrates the issue, and it is effectively Batman versus the Joker. I think the artwork is quite nice. I like the fact that Tony Daniel is not a decompressed artist. He actually tries to pack each page with as much as he can. He tries to make his artwork about character as much as possible. I was not all that thrilled with the plot. I didn't really get much that I haven't gotten from previous Batman versus the Joker stories. I thought the Dollmaker, who's sort of introduced towards the end, has potential, but as we'll probably find it more interesting as the series progresses. But for one of the first major Bat relaunch, sort of a bit of a, not quite a nothing, but what was really wanting more. I give it 2.5 looks.
Yeah, really, the entire book just seems to be set up for that last page, and that actually annoys me a bit. I would have liked a bit more story in this.
Mm.
It's interesting, Tony Daniel's clearly been reading his Dark Knight Returns, because a lot of his layouts and his panels, there's a lot of, you know, close-ups and weird angled close-ups and half shots of faces and things. So he's clearly been heavily influenced by Frank Miller's work. So, and that works, you know, the artwork comes across quite nice, but I really would have liked more story. Mm. And something a bit more than just, you know, Joker versus Batman for the 400 billionth time.
Mm.
But, yeah, having said that, it was okay. I'll give it 2.
Okay, cool. I quite liked it. It was Batman versus Joker for, you know, the 100th millionth time, but it's in the new universe, so it's, you know, it tries to be as fresh as it can. I got to have a statement against the end page. As cool as it was, I just don't think the rating that the book has is appropriate.
This has been rated T for Teen and Swamp Thing and some of the other, you know, supposed horror books, which actually don't have anywhere near as gruesome an image, is rated higher.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
It's inconsistent. I agree with his artwork. It was, at first I was kind of like, oh, here we go, it's just another generic, you know, they all look the same, Wildstorm sort of type stuff. But I got into it as it went along. I mean, he definitely puts in a lot of work.
Hmm. Particularly the scene with Commissioner Gordon and Batman. I thought that was a very nice little straight moment.
That was quite nice. Hmm. And that's good stuff. But overall, underwhelmed. Nowhere near as good as the pre-reboot run that Detective just had.
Yeah, which
was magnificent.
Yep.
So a shame that I had to go from there. But it was okay. I'll give it 2 weeks. Okay, so we'll give Luke a rest now that he's just done 3 in a row. Thanks, Luke. And we'll head over to Richo for Green Arrow 1.
Yes, Green Arrow. I want to just point out here that I'm actually a very, very big fan of Green Arrow.
Pre-reboot
Green Arrow. I love the sort of left-leaning sort of social justice character that he used to be. Unfortunately, all of that is gone from this first issue. There's really, other than the fact that he wears green and carries a bow and arrow and fires some arrows from time to time, there's absolutely nothing in this issue that identifies him with the previous character at all, which is actually a first. Most of these DC issues, at least you're getting a sense of the old characters in the new depictions of them, but there's really, this is more, they've clearly gone for the Smallville approach to the character. You know, they're even starting to draw him to look like, is it Justin Hartley?
Yeah.
The actor from Smallville. His costume looks like the Smallville costume. The setup for the character is the Smallville setup for the character. But in doing all of that, they've kind of just made him dull and generic and just like a poor man's Batman. you know, he's the millionaire. He's got this team of people that help him out. He's, you know, decked out with state-of-the-art technology. He's got millions at his disposal. And that just suddenly makes him a really boring character. As for the rest of the issue, the villains were very generic and also very boring. The storytelling was dull. The artwork from Dan Jurgens and George Perez was actually quite nice in a very sort of traditional superhero kind of way. But really, J.T. Krull has completely dropped the ball in the writing on this one. And yeah, I'm sorry, I'm giving this issue half a look. I just thought it was terrible.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah. And I'm angry. I'm angry at DC for doing this to one of my favourite characters.
Green Arrow. No, it's just one of those DC characters that just seems to have been around forever. Mm. And, you know, no powers, but, you know, cool. And cornerstone. Some of his stories are just, you know, the cornerstone of the DC universe. The Green Arrow, Green Lantern team-ups. Yeah. You know, Speedy. Yeah,
Longbow Hunters.
Yeah, and just stuff like that. Just, and to see him become this is just a travesty. In my opinion, I'm not even that big a Green Arrow fan, but this is an insult to the Green Arrow character.
They've removed everything that made him distinct and made him stand out from the rest of the DC.
No, he's just an everybody. He's just an anybody. Yeah. And I'm not going to bother repeating everything you just said because I agree with everything you just said. Except actually the artwork. I actually thought the artwork was quite pedestrian and just not their usual standard. I'm definitely going with half a look as well.
Okay, I don't like J.T. Krull as a writer. What he did before, you know, Green Arrow, with Arsenal, I thought was abysmal. And so I'm not surprised that what he's done with Green Arrow is what's happened. Because
he's either one that chopped up Arsenal's arm and all that sort of stuff.
That's him.
Dude, you suck.
Terrible. Will not be reading Green Arrow. Zero looks.
Okay. Short to the point.
Zero looks, man.
Yeah, it's just the days of those sort of comics are done. I mean, if you're going to reboot and try and get in new readers, I mean, yeah, sure, I'm sure there's some, you know, some young boys that are going to like it.
If you're going to jump in and reboot it and try and attract new readers, you've got to make the character stand out.
Yeah.
And what they've done is the complete opposite.
They've removed all of
that. Yeah.
Okay, so one for me, we've got Hawk and Dove. This book sucked. That's about all I can really say for you. Sterling Gates, writer, Rob Liefeld, the Rob Liefeld, artist, if that's what you want to call him. You should be ashamed of yourselves. It's just an absolute disgrace. Surprisingly enough, Rob Liefeld, he's absolutely hopeless. Hopeless. But in this issue, he's at least learned to do not be so ridiculously over the top.
He can draw ankles now.
Yeah, he can actually draw ankles, and people have necks.
Yeah, it's taken 20 years for him to get to that point.
So that's okay. But
isn't that like, you know, year one of basic anatomy at art school?
It's 20 years too late, Rob. I don't want to come across as too much of a hater, but I can't get past the fact that this comic just sucks. Its story is boring. It's inconsistent. The artwork, as I said, is a disgrace. They go out of their way to make it as exciting and colourful as they can with like the colouring. So whoever did the colouring, great job. But the actual story itself is just an absolute disgrace and zero looks.
What I think annoyed me the most about this issue is that we have two lead characters in obviously Hawk and Dove. Hawk is just irritating. I actually despise the character. He comes across as arrogant. He comes across as whiny more than anything else. He's just constantly complaining. And look, he's always had a little bit of that in him. He's an avatar of war, so you know he's a bit brash and you know.
He was never whiny though.
But he spends the entire issue whinging, and I just don't want to read about that character. I don't want to read about a character who spends all of his time whining. Yeah. I get no sense of Dove really as much of a character at all. Yes, we're revealed that she has some sort of hidden secret, but that's not enough for me to want to keep
reading. I'm glad you brought
that
up, because I was just going to say, the sequence where he's talking about his brother that's gone, and she's talking to Dead Man about her origin, I actually lost track of what was going on. I just didn't even understand that there was actually some big secret. It's like, well, that's why I told you, and I can't tell him. Can't tell him what? Where's the origin? I don't get it. What is it? I don't understand it.
That brings up another problem with the issue. This, more than any other issue, is written in a way that says you've got to know what happened before.
Yeah.
Because Dead Man is there. He's clearly involved in some kind of romantic relationship with Dove.
Which happens in Brightest, as a result of Brightest Day.
Okay, so I haven't read Brightest Day. And that's the thing. If you're reintroducing these characters, if you're going to bring Dead Man into it, you've got to introduce who Dead Man is as well, as who Hawk and Dove are, so that we can understand what the relationship between Dove and Dead Man is.
So they've failed. So once again, so Brightest Day, so you have to, would have to have read Brightest Day to understand what the hell is going on here.
Yes.
But you're not meant to read anything before this. This is number one.
Yeah, this is the
number
issue.
Number one, I want to see them get their powers. I want to at least have a, it's like, I don't know, now, in next issue, we'll get out, you know, we'll show you how we get out.
And I think this issue fails more than any other issue. This fails in that respect.
Yeah.
As for the artwork, yeah, look, it's not great. I'm not going to tee off on it just because of the artwork. I actually think what really lets it down more than anything else is the story.
Yeah.
And yeah, look, I've got to give this one a zero as well.
This is one of those books that, when it was announced, I have actually decided to boycott it completely. I will be avoiding it at all costs. Zero looks.
Fair enough. Okay, our next comic we covered on the website, which I myself did a little review for it, but this time we'll get the whole crew's opinion. I'm, of course, talking about the flagship title, Justice League. Take it away, Luke.
Okay, for those of you out there in nerd culture land wondering why I've been sort of a bit, you know, low and not throwing myself up, I'm saving it all for this. Justice League Issue 1, written by Geoff Johns and Jim Lee. And if you want a story, it's pretty much this. Batman, getting chased by cops, chasing either a parademon or a hunger dog, depending your interpretation, meets Green Lantern, end of story. That's the entire issue. It seems to be, in my opinion, it seems to be Geoff Johns writing to Jim Lee's very limited strength as an artist. He does the occasional, you know, splash page very nicely. He's an okay pinup artist, but man's not a storyteller. This is horribly decompressed, but beyond that, this is the flagship book. This is the first one they introduced. Where is the awe and wonder? Where is the sense that, you know, these guys are the characters you should be reading about? This is flat. The only character who I get a real sense of is Cyborg, who I think is a very well-handled character. You don't get his transformation into Cyborg. You get the Vic Stone setup, and I'm assuming his storyline is going to progress through the preceding issues. But it's Justice League. I pace my 4 bits to actually read about the Justice League. I want Aquaman. I want The Flash. I want Superman in more than just one page. You know, I want the team. If you want to tell me how the team formed, fine. Tell me how the team formed. Don't spend the entire, 40-odd page issues of the entire story having, you know, witty banter between, you know, Green Lantern and Batman, the two popular characters at DC at the moment. Yeah, no. This could be better. This is meant to be the one that's holding the DCU together, and I think that really they need to up their game. This is a one look book.
Yeah, give Luke what he wants, people. Come on.
Exactly.
Sorry, okay, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was good. I agree and disagree. I made similar points. It's I did want to see the entire team.
Mm.
I can understand why.
Mm.
I mean, you can introduce the team as it goes along.
Mm.
But it doesn't have to be so decompressed. I mean, they could have had more than what they had. I mean, the conversation between Bat and Green Lantern, not only is it annoying, and just some terrible dialogue, but it just goes on for far too long. And I do actually think it's a parademon.
I think it's a parademon.
Throw my two cents in there. But I totally agree with the Vic Stone stuff. I mean, it was the most interesting part of the story. And told you everything you needed to know.
And that seemed to be the Geoff Johns bit.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've read that scene, him do that type of scene in Flash and Teen Titans. And, you know, he always does that scene very well because he establishes character.
Yeah.
They should have really had scenes like that one for each of the characters.
That's right.
Well, maybe if you're not going to do, because, I mean, it's a fairly big team, even if you're not going to do all of the characters, just a little glimpse at, you know, at least some of those characters to give us a reason to want to keep reading. This reads more like an issue of Brave and the Bold.
Mm.
It's the Batman Green Lantern team up.
It's not what it should have been. And, this is, it's very disappointing.
This is the let's get back, let's restart the DCU.
Yeah. So it's 5 years. It's set 5 years before present DCU. And
so tell me what the DCU is. I get a sense is that the heroes aren't really all that well liked. Batman's, you know, being chased yet again by cops.
Yeah.
But I get nothing beyond that. I don't get a sense of what the DCU is. I don't get a sense of how it, of what the differences are and how it's changed. And
one of the main things that annoyed me is in the conversation with Green Lanterns, you know, it's, you're real, Batman. You're actually real. It's well, you're a space cop who's seen all these different types of aliens and all this sort of stuff. Blackest Night's actually, you know, still happened, or may in the future. I don't know because it's 5 years. Who knows? But it's, why is it so hard to believe that there's a dude in a suit running around a city beating up people? Right?
When you know about Superman.
When Superman exists. Because he hasn't met him yet. But
haven't met him yet, but, you know, they talk about, you know, the existence of Superman and...
Yeah, but if this didn't have the Vic Stone stuff in it, I would have lost.
That's my one look, the Vic Stone stuff.
Yes, I also agree with the Jim Lee statement. I'm a Jim Lee fan. I think he's quite a good artist. But, yeah, with pin-ups and stuff, sequentially, I just don't think it works all that very well. I just want to... my main point I want to bring up is the costumes on the cover. I just want to know why Aquaman, Superman, Green Lantern all have the exact same colours. Why? I don't know. It's a small point, but I want to know. So I'm going to give it 2 looks.
One of my biggest problems with this issue was, other than, obviously, I would have liked to have seen more of the team, I would have liked to have seen a better build-up and certainly more awe factor. You know, this book should have been full of awe and wonder and amazement and excitement. But the other thing was, for a double-sized issue, it's an unbelievably light read. Like, you get through it quickly, and it's very unsatisfying in that regards. Having said that, it was entertaining enough. There was some interesting stuff there. And as I said on the website, I'm going to give it 2.5 looks.
Okay, moving right along. Another Justice League book, Justice League International.
This book is actually kind of an interesting contrast to Justice League in that... Unlike the decompression of Justice League, this book sets up the team in about the first 6 or 7 pages, 8 pages or so, and already has them going out on their first mission. You get a good understanding of why this team has been formed. The UN has put the team together, and they want a team that they can actually control. They want a team that is a contrast to the Justice League, who operate independent from them. So already you're getting an understanding of why the team's formed, what they're about. It's clearly an unpopular decision. We see a bit of that. Obviously, Booster Gold is our focal character here. And I must admit, I'm a big fan of Booster. So it's good to see him getting, you know, a prominent role in the book. Look, it's not a brilliant story or anything. It's solid storytelling. Like I said, it gives you a little glimpse of the team, who the members are and what they're about. Enough to make me interested. Quickly gets them out into their first mission. And, it was, like I said, a relatively satisfying, not brilliant read, but I'm going to give it 3 looks.
I like the book as well. I'm a big fan of the Giffen DeMatteis run on Justice League International from the late 80s to early to mid 90s, which had Booster and a lot of the team members. It's a good book. Sets up, you know, the international intrigue side of things. Gets the ball rolling a lot faster than Justice League does.
Yeah, but don't you think it gets the ball rolling a little too fast? But I like the premise that the UN puts the team together. I love the fact that they're in the Hall of Justice, which looks exactly the same as the cartoon Super Friends cartoon. Awesome, but they're put together. They don't know each other, and Booster even specifically says, "I don't even know what half these people do," and then they get thrown on a mission.
I think, but you've also got to remember
half an hour later.
But see, I think that works because clearly this is just the UN slapping this team together in a response to the Justice League.
Yeah,
there's clearly something going on with the UN as to why they've put this team together, and the fact that they've just slapped them together and then thrown them into the mix, I think actually makes the story more interesting.
I disagree. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's just I would not want to lead a team where I didn't know what they were capable of doing.
And Booster clearly doesn't want to lead this team either. He's confused right from the first page when he shows up and is asking where Superman and Wonder Woman are.
Yeah.
So he's clearly sort of thrown in the deep end. And I actually like that aspect of the story.
Does it explain the difference between Justice League and Justice League International?
Well, it explains that the Justice League is operating as an independent unit. So the main team, they're just out doing what they do because they're heroes. And that the UN is putting their own team together.
It'll be controlled by
that they can control, so that, yeah, so it gives you the basic premise.
They have to observe the Geneva Convention.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Say so, yeah. Yeah, they have to, well, more importantly, they have to follow orders. Mm. Yeah, look, it's not, it didn't completely blow me away, but it was good, solid storytelling by Dan Jurgens. He doesn't quite have the humour that Giffen and DeMatteis had in the original Justice League International series, but there's a few humorous moments there where he tries to sort of recapture some of that. And, yeah, and Aaron Lopresti delivers some good, solid superhero artwork. And really, good and solid is probably how I describe the entire issue.
I actually would have liked a bit more humour in the book. Just, you know, Justice League International, always been a humour book in the past. Mixed with the action and the intrigue, and I'd have liked a bit more. It's a thriller book for me.
Okay, cool. I like the team. I think it's a little uninspired. I mean, it's basically essentially the same team.
Mm.
A little bit of a mix-up, except with August General and Iron, who is awesome.
Yes,
he is awesome.
And I like the sort of the banter between him and Rocket Red.
A little over the top, I thought. I mean, at first it was funny, but then it sort of just went on a bit too much. But still, you know.
There does seem to be a suggestion here that maybe this team will actually feature more members coming in and out of it as missions progress. Yeah,
they get a distinct impression it's going to be rotating as it goes.
Yeah, so more like the Justice League Unlimited cartoon approach to things.
Exactly,
and I quite like that idea as well.
Yeah, and I thought it was inoffensive, you know, family-friendly fun.
Yeah, solid.
And, it was solid. So, I'm going to give it 2.5.
Wait a minute, is that Batman?
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the Green Lantern?
That's a Green Lantern.
Well, there's heaps of...
Why is Batman in both teams?
Oh, yeah. He just shows up to just watch what's happened.
Okay. And they try to explain it by saying that, you know, they want a connection between both teams, and Batman being the paranoid freak that he is...
Although they say we want a team we can control, there's no way you can control the Batman.
Mm.
And that comes across in the issue as well, in probably the best moment.
Mm.
Okay, moving right along... Men of War. Okay, Men of War is, as the title would suggest, a war comic, a military comic, so just a bit different from the superhero stuff. It is, of course, still in the DC Universe, so there are superheroes. Okay, it's written by Ivan Brandon, with art by Tom Derenick. There's also a backup story written by Jonathan Vanken and Phil Winslade, which I'll get to in a second. So like I said, it's a military comic. Not really my thing. About as close as I would get to a military comic would be the new Venom series from Marvel, which is not even really a military comic, but that's about as close as it gets, so that'll give you an example. It concerns Sergeant Rock, the new version of Rock, and his trials and tribulations on the battlefield with a new team. It's okay. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not really my thing, so I had to really try and read it. It got the most interesting to me was... The point was when a superhero or a superpower being eventually arrives. But yeah, it was pretty cool, but not really something that I would go out of my way to read or get. So I won't continue with it. I mean, it ends on a smidgen of a cliffhanger, which I really didn't really care about. The artwork, though, is excellent. Very, very cool. It's very dynamic. It's not over the top. It's slightly cartoony, but still... totally believable. I quite liked it, and unlike Rags Morales on Action, I mean, I knew instantly where Rock was at all times. It was very distinct. Each person was very distinct, and some really nice colouring as well, especially during the bombing sequence. The backup story, I didn't really think much all that much of. The artwork is pretty standard, sort of kind of old school, but the story itself wasn't really all that interested. But at least good to see some non-superhero stuff out there, and I hope it's a success. I really do. But I won't be continuing with it, so I'll give it 2 looks.
I'd actually have to agree with most of what you said there. It's actually got some good, strong character work, this book. You get a really good sense of who Rock is and what he's about. But, yeah, military books just really aren't my thing either. Yeah, I'm glad that DC has gone for diversity here. But I don't really know. I might check out the next issue. I don't really know. It's just not... War comics just aren't, generally speaking, my sort of thing. There's only a very few exceptions to those. Usually, you know, the old Joe Kubert, Enemy Ace and Sergeant Rock stuff I appreciate. But, yeah, so whilst this book was interesting, it's probably not interesting enough to hold my attention more, but I'll also give it 2 looks.
Yeah, it is what it is. As has been said, it's nice that... DC's doing not just superheroes, they're trying to, you know, go through the back catalogue and bring up a whole bunch of older characters, although this is a new version of, this is Sergeant Rock's son, isn't it?
Grandson.
Yeah. I'm ambivalent about the book. No rating.
Okay, next, one of the ones I was looking forward to, and I know a certain other crew member was looking forward to.
It was me.
We have Richo with OMAC.
Yeah, I should quantify this. As we've said on past podcasts, I am one of the biggest Jack Kirby fans in the world. I just love his books, and I love the old OMAC. It's one of my absolute favourite series, and I was pretty excited about this book, mainly because it's written by Dan Didio and co-plotted by Didio and Giffen. But really, what's excited me about this is Giffen. He's a dynamic storyteller, he's an exciting artist, and he can really capture the look and feel of a Kirby comic while still maintaining his own artistic identity. And really, look, OMAC is just fun, exciting, action-oriented comic books. There's
old school.
There's not a deep amount of characterization here yet. They certainly throw you in basically into the action very quickly, and it just doesn't stop. It's just all-out action from start to finish. But it's exciting. I got the sense that I used to get from, you know, from older action comics and from when you would pick up a Kirby comic and just see this dynamic, exciting work. And that's really what I got from OMAC. This was absolutely everything that I was expecting the book to be. You know, it's big, it's silly, there's, you know, cool, absurd villains, big ideas, craziness from start to finish. And look, that's something that's been lost in a lot of modern comics these days. That just that sense of fun and excitement has disappeared from comics. And I'm glad that Giffen and Didio were able to actually capture that again, because, yeah, this issue was a lot of fun.
Dan Didio sounds like a 50s rock song.
There she was, just a walking down the street, singing Dan Didio, Didio, Didio.
I gotta agree with you. It is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's bombastic, you might even say.
Absolutely,
it's in your face. I love the end page.
Yes,
like, and now things get even weirder.
Yes,
great stuff. Yeah. Artwork was really cool. It was it's reminiscent without being exactly the same.
Absolutely, right.
Colouring was really, really, you know, really comicky, bright.
Mm. Yep.
Lots of colours in your face, sort of stuff.
I think this book has the potential to be a book that would actually attract young readers as well.
That's right.
It's
bright,
it's exciting, it's fun.
Beefy guy doing what he does. It's pretty good. I'm also a big fan of the original OMAC series. Mm-hmm. And,
great stuff.
Yeah, it's great stuff. But the only thing I didn't really like was, is Cadmus now bad guys? I'm not too sure what the deal is there.
Cadmus have been bad guys pretty much since the death of Superman.
Oh, okay, so this is this. Oh, okay, cool. All right, sweet. Obviously, I missed that point. And the other thing is, I don't like his mohawk. It's just too big, in my opinion. I like the sparks around it and all that sort of stuff. And maybe it's sort of like some sort of energy source or something. I assume it's how he communicates with the thing at the end of the comic, which I won't reveal. It's just far too big, I think.
If I was going to have any a complaint against the comic, would be I would have liked to know a little bit more about Kevin, I'm going to say Ko,
yep.
K-H-O, the character that becomes OMAC. A little bit more about him would have been nice, but at the same time, I read this with a real sense of, just entertaining fun. Yeah.
So what does OMAC stand for? Because it's
One Man Army Corps, or at least that's what it used to stand for.
Yeah,
he shouts out, I am OMAC, and it's got the full stops in between.
It does, yes.
Does he say, I am O, full stop, M, full stop?
Well, I get the feeling some of the backstory part of things is what we'll get in the second issue. They've certainly
set it up for
the second issue to be a little bit more of a sort of revelatory issue.
I think it's safe to say it's still going to be One Man Army Corps. I'm also a big fan of the sequence where he punches the woman in the face, which I have to point out is a robot. Like, don't freak out, people.
It's a builder friend. Thank you very much.
It's a builder friend. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, rating, Richard?
Yeah, look, I'm going to give this book 4 Lukes. I was just so entertained reading it. I had so much fun that it deserves the 4. It's as I said, it's exactly what I was hoping for and exactly what the book was advertised to be.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 3 Lukes. It's entertaining, and I'm glad you could read it and enjoy it. And it is a brand new, fresh take, and
isn't it?
You don't have to read the other stuff.
That's meant to be the goal, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Exactly right. So I think it works in this one. Luke?
I'm giving this 3.5 Lukes. It is exactly what was advertised in the box. Nothing but fun, brash, over-the-top mayhem. I would have liked maybe a little bit more story, maybe, but on the whole, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Cool. Okay, next we have Static Shock. Static Shock has been aimed at the younger reader, I would assume. It stars Static Shock, obviously. It's a Dwayne McDuffie character from the Milestone imprint. He is a young African-American man with electrical-based powers. Okay, so it's penciled by Scott McDaniel, and it's co-plotted by both McDaniel and John Rosum. As I mentioned, it's story concerns a young African-American character. He's cool, he's funky, he's got some very impressive-looking powers. So he's relocated from Dakota to New York City, and I think he's either the only one or one of the few superheroes running around New York City. He is working for Star Labs, because he's a young prodigy, and just getting up to general mischief. I liked it. The artwork is very cool, very reminiscent of the cartoon. It flows quite well. And by reminiscent, I don't mean that the artwork looks like the cartoon, but I mean it looks cartoony, so it looks kind of animated. His powers are cool, and he uses them very interestingly, and it looks cool when he does it. He's just a fun character. I mean, he's brash and, you know, teenagery, and it's just it's a refreshing sort of take. So hopefully it's a success. I quite enjoyed it. I also quite liked the villain, the Piranha. Heck, you don't love that. Bit of a killer croc, sort of a fishy killer croc type deal. And I'm intrigued. I'm going to give it 3 looks.
Yeah, I think this, like some of the other books we've mentioned, this actually succeeds as a first issue. I get a really good sense of who Static Shock is as a character, what he's about. You're introduced to his family. You get the sort of brash cockiness of a young hero. You understand that he's recently moved to New York, so he's new to the city, and they do a good job of sort of capturing the excitement of being in New York. You get some interesting villains, good sense of Static's powers as well. So as a first issue, this actually, I think, succeeds really well. And I was pleasantly surprised. I actually didn't really have much of an interest in this book to begin with.
Yeah.
But, I think I will check out the subsequent issues, because I was very much entertained by the book. So I'm also going to give it 3.
I'm a big fan of Scott McDaniel as an artist. I've been since his run on Batman, and I think he does exactly what he's meant to do here. Create a fun, vibrant world for the character, making him relatable certainly to younger readers. I don't have much of a relationship with Static Shock. Didn't really grow up with reading the Milestone stuff, and when he got reintroduced a couple of years ago in Justice League, it was sort of interesting, but no real impetus to keep reading. But this one, I think, I want to see more. 3 looks.
Okay, so next up we have another one for me. This is the one that I was handing out the most for, is Stormwatch. It's written by Paul Cornell and illustrated by Miguel
Sepulveda.
Thank you, Luke. Excellent. It is, of course, the rebooted version of the Stormwatch team from Wildstorm, now that Wildstorm is integrated with the DC Universe. So it's a reimagining. So I was a huge fan of the later Stormwatch issues, which then eventually became the Authority. I really, really like the Authority, or at least the first half of the Authority before it goes a bit strange. I was really looking forward to this. So how could you say no, really, to the Stormwatch team with Martian Manhunter in it? I mean, pretty cool. Unfortunately, though, I was let down. This really did not live up to my, to be fair, high expectations. I mean, yeah, it does. It introduces the team far more effectively than Justice League does. I mean, you actually get the whole team. And the main people are there. Hawksmoor, Engineer, a couple of the others. Jenny, the new child of the century. And it involves the team trying to recruit Apollo, who in this version doesn't actually know Midnighter yet. It also introduces, tries to introduce a high concept idea of the moon actually going to become a bad guy. It's. I think it tries a little too hard. Isn't as interesting as I think it thinks it is, but it wasn't terrible. The artwork is decent. I mean, the artwork does the job, I suppose, but wasn't quite as, didn't really grab me as much as the artwork of, say, Batwing or Detective. And I also think it's a bit jumbled. I mean, it sort of goes all over the place. There's no real coherence. I mean, you get a lot of Martian Manhunter doing his thing and, you know, a bit of Apollo and all that sort of stuff, but there's no really indication to why they really need Apollo, considering they have Martian Manhunter, who is a Superman-level being anyway. So it's kind of strange. It's really just more an excuse just to get Apollo and Midnighter into the team, really. And yeah, and so you get introduced to Jack and Hawksmoor, and, you know, he's a bit of a prick, and there's no real indication to why. It's like I said, it's jumbled. A bit like my review. It's been all over the place. I give it 2 looks.
But your review was far more interesting and insightful. I agree with a lot of what you've said. I actually don't have the history with Stormwatch and the Authority. And I was coming to this primarily because I'm a fan of the Martian Manhunter and Paul Cornell. And I didn't come away with a desire to know more about either Apollo or Midnighter. And that's what I actually wanted to come away with, the whole idea of, you know, wanting to go back and check out Stormwatch and the Authority, based on, you know, how I thought how good this might be. They really weren't that interesting as characters. I liked the Luna bit. That was the one bit where I actually paid a lot more attention, a lot more interest to, because I thought there was something happening there. But on the whole, I thought could have been a lot better. I did like the moment, though, where Apollo tries to punch out the Martian Manhunter and suffers from whatever psychic backlash the Martian Manhunter throws at him. That was like, yes.
Yeah, I'm not saying there wasn't any cool moments. I mean, yeah, the moon interrogating the guy was, you know, was pretty cool. But I mean, one thing I don't like is the cover. I mean, the cover has Apollo and Midnighter on it, which is, I mean, so now you know they're going to be part of the team. It's kind of weird. But yeah, I just think there was, I mean, there's a sequence with two people in the snow, like in the Arctic regions or something, looking at something, and I didn't quite know what they were doing there, and to be honest, didn't really give a rat's.
And I didn't know who they were. I mean, I kind of gathered that Jenny Quantum was, you know, the Jenny Quantum from
the new Century Child,
I had no idea who Adam One was.
Yeah.
And when they talked about him off panel, I went, hang on, I know who Jack Hawksmoor is, I know who Apollo and Midnighter are, I have an idea who Jenny Quantum is, who's Adam One?
Yeah. And who cares, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ready?
I'd give this about 2 looks. It's not offensive. I don't hate it, but I thought it could have been better.
It wasn't hot enough. That's to come on your benchmark.
I actually didn't dislike this issue anywhere near as much as you guys did. I loved the sequence with the moon. I love high concept stuff like that in comics. And I love that Paul Cornell is trying to be a little bit more creative with this. I do agree, though, that it probably failed to really introduce the characters properly to you. You really do need to have at least an interesting idea of, some idea of who these people are, in order for the comic to work really well. Other than Apollo, because obviously they're reintroducing him, so you get at least a little bit of information about him and who he is, but really, if you hadn't read Authority or Stormwatch or didn't know anything about them, then I think you would struggle a little bit to understand who these people are, what they're about.
Yeah. You get a brief bit with Stormwatch through the years, you
know. but not enough to really, to give you an idea of what Stormwatch is as an organization or why you'd want to read about that organization. Yes, you understand that they operate behind the scenes, but that's about it.
I just think it's a poor mix. I mean, I just don't think the background of Stormwatch and the Authority, particularly. I mean, they're introduced. It's mainly the Authority. It's not really even Stormwatch. It's you know, the concept of the bleed and the carrier, and also, I just don't think that works in the DC universe.
Well, I think it can work. I just don't think it comes across in this issue at all. Like, this issue is failing as a first issue because it's not introducing you to all of the elements you need to know about the book in order to continue reading it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just dropping little hints and bits and pieces and fragments of story. For me, it wasn't such a big issue because I've read Authority, I've read Stormwatch, so I know who the characters are. But for new readers, I don't think it works that well.
I mean, back to what I was saying. I mean, we've said it before. I mean, Blackest Night, for example, who I'm a big fan of, is still continuity. It's just, to me, it just doesn't seem to work if they have this concept of the bleed and what the bleed can do, and anybody who's familiar with the Authority would know. How does that work in a universe where things like Blackest Night occurred? I mean, why didn't they, if Blackest Night occurred, why didn't they use the technology that the Authority has, or in this case, Stormwatch, as well as the bleed and the carrier and alternate Earths and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it just Black as Night wouldn't have happened the way it happened if the bleed existed.
And that's really where the problem lies here, is that it really does come back to not properly introducing the concept of Stormwatch, what it's about, why it exists, to the new reader. And I must admit, though, I did really like the artwork.
Yeah.
I thought the artwork was actually really nice.
Yeah, cool stuff.
I think it fits in nicely with some of the past artists that have worked on the books. So it maintains a continuity of style. There are similarities with the Brian Hitch run, and even with the earlier sort of Tom Rainey work on Stormwatch. So I liked that element of it. I thought the artist did a very good job. Look, I'll give it 2.5. I thought it was solid, but I think it failed in some respects as a first issue.
Okay, so for our last comic, we have, last but not least, Swamp Thing.
Okay, Swamp Thing is written by Scott Snyder, who's made a bit of a name for himself through...
The excellent American Vampire.
Yeah, through Vertigo work, and it's penciled by Yannick Paquette. Probably a good choice of writer to pick somebody up from Vertigo, since Swamp Thing was actually a Vertigo book for a very long time. And this is apparently going to be more of a horror comic. But more than anything else, this first issue is a character study of Alec Holland. It introduces us to who he is, lets us know quite a bit about him. And he's an interesting character. He's a human. He has the memories of being Swamp Thing whilst never actually having been Swamp Thing. And he still has this connection to the green, which is the kind of life energy of all sort of plants and things that Swamp Thing has actually been connected to for the whole time.
It's similar to Animal Man's The Web. With
yeah,
the animals,
very similar to Animal Man. There's, it's kind of, I guess, the flora equivalent of Animal Man. So he has this connection. He's a bit lost as a character at the moment because he has these memories that aren't really his. And he's struggling to deal with that. He's struggling to deal with the creation of the formula that he's worked on because he is a former scientist. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a lot story-wise happens in this issue. There's a few subplots set up. But as a character study, I think it works really well. I actually care about Alec Holland as a character. And there's a nice sort of twist at the end that has me very interested in reading the next issue, and obviously I won't spoil that twist, but it's all set up, but it's set up that works very well for the book. As I said, there are a couple of subplots. There's a guest appearance by Superman that I think actually works very well.
Yeah, so it's obviously set in modern, in today DC.
Yeah,
it's Superman in his silly old costume.
Yeah, so it's it's not an action packed adventure book or anything like that. It's a slow build, but it's a slow build that worked for me. And I'm going to give it 3.5.
Yep, I agree with everything you said. It's just consistent, solid, enjoyable storytelling, character development. This and Animal Man, I think, had the most character development in any of the comics, probably put together.
Yeah. And Batgirl, I think.
Oh, and Batgirl, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well. It just shows Justice League how it's done. Mm. The artwork was solid. It wasn't outstanding, it did what it had to do. And the last page was just magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
So the introduction, the minute Superman arrived, I was kind of like, oh, why? But he was all right. He did what he had to do.
He serves the purpose that he serves. The purpose. And he's there to really give us more insight into Alec Holland. So
that's
it works as a guest appearance as well.
So I quite enjoy it. I mean, I will continue to read. I'm very interested to see how the horror element sort of takes over. So this how it sort of stacks up to the Alan Moore run, obviously, which of course it will be judged by.
Of course.
But it's not Scott Snyder. I'm a huge fan, and I'll also give it 3.5 looks.
There's not a lot that I can add. I really enjoyed the issue. I like the fact that Scott Snyder is trying to make sense of what's been going on with Swamp Thing recently, because it has been a little bit confusing. He's tried to actually... So, right, this is who the character is, and this is what we're going to do with him. Alec Holland's great. I love the scene with Superman, because unlike Action Comics, it actually humanized Superman quite well.
Yeah.
And yet, you still got a sense of this is a different Superman. Alec Holland comes across as a great character, and I will certainly be checking out the rest of the series. I give this 3 looks.
Okay, so there you have it. That is the first week, and a little bit of it, because Justice League came out first. of the New 52. It's an interesting introduction, some interesting choices to be the first batch to come out, I thought.
There is one element that actually links all of the books together, and that is that in one panel in every single issue, there is this mysterious hooded woman who appears to be watching the entire history of the DC Universe unfold. They haven't really revealed...
Troy?
Possibly, or yeah, like a Harbinger-type character. Harbinger type, but yeah. They really don't tell you much about her. She appears at the end of Flashpoint number 5.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's... Look, I mean, it's clearly at some point it's going to lead to a big crossover event. There's no doubt about that. That's clearly what she's there for. I'd like them to not do that in the short term. I'd like to have at least 2 years for these books to develop on their own before they try something big like that. Well, it's guaranteed that that's not going to be happening in 3 months.
The Justice League story will finish in 3 more issues?
No, it'll finish in 5 more issues.
Oh, it's a 5, is it?
Yeah.
I'll give it 6 months.
I am kind of hoping that this won't, that this won't be part of a big crossover for at least 2 years. But look, all it's really doing so far is just being kind of like a little Easter egg hidden in the issues to sort of link them all together in a shared universe kind of way. And I certainly prefer that approach to, you know, the massive events every 6 month approach that seems to be have dominated comics for the last few years. Yeah, so for now, I actually quite like it. I mean, obviously, there's the potential for it to become something horrible and disastrous in the end.
Which it will.
But you never know. It reminds me, it does remind me a little bit of the early appearances of Harbinger in the Monitor.
Yeah, yeah.
In the build-up to Crisis on Infinite Earths. But even there, the Monitor was appearing for 2 years before they got to the big story. And I'm really hoping that that will happen here. I'm hoping
well, glad you brought up Monitor and Crisis on Infinite Earths, because that brings me to my next point, is that as a marketing exercise, I just don't think this reboot did what they wanted it to do. It hasn't. I mean, yes, the main thing they want is to bring in new readers and make money, which is they definitely have done. But I think they've dropped the ball in. Instead of having a clean break and starting again from fresh, they've done this. Some things are in continuity, some things aren't in continuity. I mean, the Batgirl thing is a perfect example, I suppose, although that does work kind of okay. But, I mean, you know, I've said Blackest Night about 100 times in this podcast, but, you know, once again, it happened. It just doesn't really make sense to me. So they should have, in my opinion, they should have started from scratch completely, like, say, New Universe from Marvel did, although better, because that was terrible. But something along those lines. So,
I think this will work okay as long as two things occur. First of all, as long as the editors know exactly what the timeline is, exactly what's in continuity.
Yeah, you better hope they've got like a million page Bible.
Yeah, so that there's no problems that occurred with things like Donna Troy, Power Girl, Hawkman, and the whole Hawk World debacle.
Yeah.
As long as they know exactly what's in and what's out and what the direction of the company is.
Yeah.
And secondly, I really do wish we could get something like... a history of the DC Universe, but for each individual character. So maybe in an annual story or something, you know, like the first annual, give us at least the basics so that we know, as readers, what's in and what's out.
Oh, I'm very much looking forward to a history of the DC Universe.
Yeah, cool. I would love to do that, but I would love to have one for each and every one of the 52 titles.
Yeah.
So it's like first annual, first year, here's at least the basics of what you need to know.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously, they don't want to reveal everything. There are some things they'll want to keep secret, for big revelations and things like that. But just give us a basic rundown so that we know, as readers, what's in and what's out. And then I don't think there'll be a problem. But for now, there are still some sort of confusing elements for the old-time readers as to, you know, which characters are being introduced, which characters are being reintroduced, which characters are starting from scratch or being rebooted.
Yeah.
And which characters are just continuing on?
The perfect example is the Hawk Adduction. I mean, to have read Brightest Day to have understood it, it's just terrible. And Batgirl did it okay.
Swamp Thing actually, I think Swamp Thing requires you to have at least some knowledge.
It does,
but it also does a good job of introducing the characters anyway. Like, I haven't read Brightest Day, I haven't read The Search for Swamp Thing, yet I still got everything I needed to know from the issue itself. So I think that's probably one of the better examples.
Strong storytelling.
Yeah, but we do need to know. We need to know what's in, what's out.
Yeah. Best or worst?
Best was Animal Man, without a doubt. Worst was Hawk and Dove.
Luke?
I'm not going to disagree with that at all.
I also agree.
Nice and simple. We have consensus.
We have complete consensus.
I hope you enjoyed that special edition audio review. Episode 7 of the Nerd Culture Podcast will be up shortly and will also be available on iTunes.